Joining us now on the AD in the Morning show, we have an absolute icon. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Peter Noone from Herman's Hermits joins us. Of course, he's coming back to town at the Adler Theater in Davenport Friday, May 22nd. Tickets are still available as Herman's Hermits starring Peter Noone. And Peter, how you doing today? It's been a while.
I'm doing great, thank you. And I'm looking forward to I love the Adler Theater. That is a beautiful theater.
It is.
It reminds me of my childhood when I used to go and see bands when I was a kid with my grandma. And she would take me to like a beautiful theater in Manchester and another one, the Empire in Liverpool. And they were beautifully decorated and they, you know, it was nice seats and nice people. So let's hope it's like that again. I played there once before and I really enjoyed the crowd.
Well, you're coming back. It's going to be another great show. It's a Friday night. Now, yeah, the Adler's pretty epic. I mean, you know, in terms of theaters and history and just all the cool stuff that goes into it. And it's so, you know, Peter Noone, you've been famous for six decades. You know, of course, British Invasion fame. I mean, I did some. Now, I got to interview you a few years ago, which was a lot of fun. And then, you know, when you talk to somebody, you always think about the things that you wish you would have asked. And you're like, oh, I should have asked them this. So I want to know. What was it like? Because after you were on Ed Sullivan, you were on every magazine, you were on all the TV shows, and you sort of had this like pre-natural idea, but this was long before music videos, but you knew how to work the camera and the crowd, which was kind of a newer thing back in the 60s. And it, you know, you just stratosphere, you know, straight on a rocket, straight into space in terms of fame. What was it like being that famous, knowing you can't really go anywhere without girls screaming?
You know, well, that was part of the one of the things. You know, when I was a kid, I was like a Yankophile. I wanted to go to America so badly. All the music that I liked was by Americans. You know, like Elvis Presley, Buddy Holly, Johnny Cash.
Sure.
Dion, you know, all the great American stuff and all the musicals like West Side Story and Sound of the South Pacific, they were all from, everything seemed to be coming from America. So I wanted to get a shot at America, you know, like most English boys. And what happened, why you say I was good on Ed Sullivan's show working the camera was because before that I was in a TV series in England, which was and is the number one nighttime TV show in England called Coronation Street. So I knew all about cameras and I had a bit of experience, and I'd also done a drama class at the Manchester College of Music. So I had all this information that was useful for a pop star. The problem is that I was 16 or 17.
Yeah.
And I had no reality. You know, I lived with my grandparents. And they were probably poor, but I didn't know they were poor. I just knew that they, you know, she baked bread and this dog has come to fuck up. Okay, I'll leave. I'm sorry, I'm at a friend's house and they got 100 dogs.
Oh, I got lots of dogs too. I totally understand.
Okay, so I live with my grandparents and, you know, everybody worked in those days. My parents were away at college. My father was at Edinburgh, my mother was at Cambridge, and I lived in this little village so I had no reality. There was nothing. I didn't know who, you know, like nowadays you know who the governor of Michigan is because there's so much information going around.
Sure.
All I had was a record player and books and a radio, so my whole life was in there. So of course the minute I got an opportunity to get in front of girls who would maybe dance with me. it was just a complete, for years and years, I didn't know, you know, I just was excited to, okay, I'm in Davenport, Iowa, how exciting is this? And, oh, now I'm in Chicago. And, you know, I traveled around the world being excited at every minute. We'd get to the Philippines and I met Elvis in Hawaii and I met Johnny Cash in Texas, in Tennessee. And I met, you know, Roy Head in Houston and, you know, all the heroes. And I met Dion and I met the Four Seasons on the Ed Sullivan show. And I was like, this is just like everything that I ever dreamed of happening to me is all happening in this short period. And you know, because I was like a happening kind of person, but I was really a kid. So I would hang out with people who didn't really want me around. You know, it was a kind of, like the Stones, I'd say to the Stones, where are you going after the show? And they said, oh, we're going back to London. And I'd say, can I come with you? And they'd all look at each other, and I'd end up in the car with them, not realizing that they'd only taken me because I was this silly little kid. They didn't want to hang with me at all. So, and the same thing would happen all the time. And I'd run into all these different people, you know, like when I met Elvis, the first question was, when are you coming to England? You know, it's like ridiculous. I just was on this burning road thing. And there's a story, the day after I met Elvis Presley, there's a story in the Hawaiian newspaper, and it says, Peter Noon, Herman from Herman's Hermits, is back on a plane again after his one day off on a 360-day tour. On his one day off of a 360-day world tour, he wanted to meet his hero, Elvis Presley. And that's really what happened.
That's a pretty good deal. What
I didn't realize that was we were on a 360-day tour. I thought that was newspaper talk, you know.
Sure. Yeah, I'm just doing work.
And during that time, I got on the front page of Time magazine, and I didn't even know.
Oh, wow. But, you know, no fear at that age either. You know, you seem like, you're like, hey, Mick, what are you guys doing? Can I go with you guys? You know, you go to Hawaii on your one day off to meet Elvis, which, you know, what, you know, that's the icon
status. Only happened because I was in a group that was popular. You know, none of it would have happened if I didn't go in the studio that day and make I'm Into Something Good, and then the other day make Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter, and then 1 hour. I mean, some people say, how long did it take to make Henry VIII? And I go, well, how long is the song? That's how long it took to make it. You know, stuff like that. So, you know,
one cut.
It's a magical period. And remember, I was surrounded by great, fantastic, superstar people. I mean, you want to see what it's like to walk in a room with one of the Beatles. That's when you know what invisible feels like.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
You know,
I bet.
Same with Elvis. I went a couple of places with Elvis in Los Angeles. Not the first time I met him, the second time I met him. And I was invisible. People didn't even look at me. We would go backstage to some famous person, and they'd be so all over Elvis that they didn't even notice the gang that he was with.
Right, right.
Do you know what I mean? So no matter how big a star and how iconic you feel you are, remember that you're always under a shadow of greatness.
That's right.
Always.
I don't know. You've done pretty good yourself, you know, and you're still at it. Another question I wanted to ask. What keeps you going? You know, what makes you want to keep rolling? Because you're doing great shows. You're doing, gosh, I can't remember what they said you're touring this year. Quite a few, and you're just
100.
A ball of fire. Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it was just over 100. You're just a ball of fire at, 78 years old?
78 and a half.
Okay, 78, my bad. 78 and a half.
Yeah, so you know, it started off as a hobby. And one day, somebody told me they would give me money for doing my hobby. And it's still my hobby. And they still give me money. I mean, I don't know what I would do if I didn't do concerts.
Right.
What would I do? So, you know, they say if you quit, you probably die.
Yeah.
You know.
Sure.
You know, and I went out 2 nights ago. I had a dinner, a party for my friend Eric Burden. You know, the Animals, Eric Burden. Mm-hmm. And he's 86. And I go, well, he's 8 years older than me. And he's still okay.
Yeah.
So I figured I got 10 more years.
Shoot for 100, you know? Why not? Just keep going. If you just keep playing music, you don't let the old man in, and you just never notice, just like you didn't really notice that you were world famous and you had girls screaming your name and chasing you around. You were just doing your thing, and I'd say you've done pretty well, Peter Noon.
I think, you know, Peter Noon and Herman are the same person, and they've both done really well, because I think Peter Noon is more normal than Herman.
I believe that.
And you know, someone said when you're at home, you're your dad, but when you're on the road, you're your mother.
I've never heard that one before.
Well, maybe you didn't have a crazy mother.
Oh, not really. No, I'm kind of like the only hell my mama ever raised, if you will.
Okay.
So, okay. So,
good.
But
good one, Aaron.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm stealing from Johnny Paycheck, but I'll take it. You know, was Elvis the coolest person you met through your, you know, through your travels? Was that probably the thing that sticks out the most?
No, I think John Lennon was probably the coolest person I met, because he was so friendly, and I didn't realize it was because I was a kid. You know, I would see him driving around in that silly car that had all the psychedelic signs, and I was a kid, so I would say, "Oh, nice and inconspicuous, John."
Right.
And he liked people, and he would say, "That's a nice suit, Hermit. Do they make it in your size?" And then, and once the ad lib, we get into this. I see them getting out of a car. Him and I knew his driver, Terry Doran. And hello, Terry. Hello, John. You know, that kind of stuff. And
sure.
They're going into this building, and they're getting in an elevator. And because I'm a kid and I don't know how to say goodbye, I get in the elevator with them. And when the elevator gets to the floor, it opens, and we're in a nightclub. And the people who run the nightclub think I'm with him.
So they let you in?
Because I'm in the elevator with him.
Yeah.
So they go and seat us at a table. And nobody says, he's not with us. We don't even know him, this little hermit guy. So I sit at the table, and they say, there's a two-drink minimum, because they know I'm not old enough to drink. And she doesn't know to say, we're not serving. So John says, I'll have two Bacardis, and he'll have two Cokes. And then he gives me a Bacardi, and I give him a Coke. And not another word is spoken.
Oh, that's hilarious. See, that's, you know, what do you think? You know, when you're watching a sunset or something and you're just thinking about your life, well, I mean, you nailed it.
I think I feel pretty good about it, because
yeah.
I don't think I've ever done anybody any harm without, you know, no malicious stuff has been done. You know, and I think about my friend Keith Moon, who would smash stuff up, and I'd be with him, and I'd be playing the game, but I never smashed anything. I never destroyed anything, you know what I mean? So
sure.
At the end of it, you know, when I get up in the morning, every morning I go, whoever put me here, and wherever you are, and whatever you're doing, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Heck yeah.
I've been okay, you know, I've got a healthy body, you know, which you inherit from your parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that. I'm grateful. And I woke up this morning feeling fine.
You bet. I'd say.
There you go. You got it, Aaron.
Yeah.
Good follow up there.
Yeah, thank you. Now, where do you live now?
I live in California. I'm at a friend's farm at the top of a mountain far away. You can see a prison from here, but otherwise it's like the countryside, and he's got horses and like 50 dogs and...
Nice.
1957 cars and stuff like that. So I'm hanging, you know, I have some real stuff going on in my life.
Well, that's totally understandable. We all get into that a little bit. I don't blame you. I just recently found out that only around 10% of the people in Great Britain have air conditioning, and it's been real hot over there lately. Last year and they think into this year. I couldn't believe nobody has AC over there.
You know what? It's slowly recovering from the World War XI. I mean, World War II, because you know, I grew up with, my grandmother had no electricity, no gas, no running water.
Wow.
And we lit the house with candles and a primer stove, and we're still able to read books most of the year, you know what I mean? And,
right.
And it takes a long time to fix the past, you know, it's a long time. So there's... You know, I feel sorry for people who live in England, because it does get cold, and the houses were built in 1946, you know, after the war.
Right.
And they were put up quickly. They were prefabricated buildings people live in. And, you know, they don't heat and they don't cool.
Right.
So that, and once upon a time, England was not very good weather all the time. And now they've got hot summers and... You know, we used to laugh when somebody would take their shirt off because the sun came out. Now the sun's out a lot in England.
Right.
So imagine, I have a story that Sir John Mills was in a play in London called The Magistrate. And at the theatre it said, Sir John Mills, The Magistrate, tonight, right?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody figured out that nobody was going to the theatre because it was so hot. It was hundreds of degrees this summer. I was there as well. And they changed the sign and it said, over the headline billing, they'd put air conditioned. And he said, no, I'm top billing.
Yeah.
He said, I'm sorry. Air conditioning is bigger than you is tonight.
That's going to get people in, eh? It's better than sweating, that's for sure. Yeah,
exactly, yeah.
Well, hey, what's that?
All this stuff is good stuff, you know. I mean, I have great little, all good experiences, you know. You know, my mom and dad had a happy sort of beginning, middle, and ending, you know. And I've got a nice little daughter and a grandson. I'm a normal person now.
Well, I'd say you always were. You just got caught up in this like outrageous amount of fame, and it just kind of held on, and you're still doing it. And that's my favorite part is that you're just like, what else am I going to do? That's great. Just keep doing it. Just keep being you.
If there's only one thing you do well, you better do it often.
Yeah, that's be yourself. So, well, hey, I know our time got a little messed up on this, but I sure appreciate you still doing the interview. You are always a gentleman every time I talk to you, and I'm so glad you're coming back to Davenport. Once again, everybody, Peter Noon, it's Herman's Hermits featuring Peter Noon, and it's Friday, May 22nd. Tickets are still out there. Peter's going to be there, and, you know, you could probably make a pretty good living just telling stories, Peter Noon.
I wish I could do that, but I got to sing a few songs at the same time.
Yeah, well, I'll do the story thing on the side. Don't let it interfere with your music. But like we're talking right now, you got me on the edge of my seat. I could listen. I know you got stuff going on, but I could sit here and talk to you for an hour.
We'll do that next time, Matt.
Yeah.
Bring a machine to the gig, and we'll do it backstage.
All right, sounds good. Well, I got your phone number. I'll call you tomorrow.
All right, see you later.
All right, thank you, Peter.
Thank you. Bye. Thanks, Sam.
You bet. Have a great day.
You too.